This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for lectures, features, and radio shows. And now, here's Coy Barefoot.
Help me welcome to the studio Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. We're honored to have you in the studio. It must mean it's Tuesday.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
Happy Tuesday. How are you doing?
Good to be here.
You have a good weekend?
It is beautiful outside.
Isn't it gorgeous?
We did have a good time last weekend. Speaking of water, in your last segment, we were up at the Baltimore Aquarium.
Get out. I've always wanted to go there.
Yeah.
Is it cool?
It's very cool.
I've heard it's like one of the best.
And then we had dinner out on the, you know, harbor there.
Wow.
It's very nice.
That's really great. Is it? So it's pretty?
It's very pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny watching my kids' reactions. I have an 11th grader and a 7th grader, and hearing, seeing them react to the idea of living in a city like that. And neither of them were too keen on that idea, coming from small town Charlottesville. So it's funny to see their reactions.
I'm assuming they really enjoyed the aquarium.
They enjoyed the aquarium, yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Is it better than the one down at Virginia Beach?
Much bigger.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to go up there. I know, and the kids would love it.
And some of the most interesting things I saw there are the all these tropical frogs. They were actually some of the more interesting things, and
really?
Snakes. So it's not just things swimming in water. They've got other exhibits, birds flying around in a tropical
really?
Exhibit.
And I wouldn't think that would be at an aquarium.
But it's so neat to be able to
walk
right
water
up
birds, I guess.
To these big fish, you know, right in the tank, right on the other side of the glass.
Yeah.
And boy, you know, our planet has some strange-looking creatures.
On that note, speaking of strange creatures, the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority announced yesterday, Brian, that they had drastically underestimated the cost of the dam, which is just one element in the final price tag of the new water supply plan.
Well, I don't know if I'd frame it quite that way.
Then correct me.
Well, you just said they drastically underestimated.
Didn't they?
Well, we
they
have
told us it was 37. Now they're saying it could be 70.
We have an updated cost estimate based on the scientific research going into the project.
Okay.
So I think you, not to quibble, but
okay, no quibbling here.
There's more information now, and yes, it's a lot more expensive.
Okay,
so
that's
all I'm
saying.
I don't disagree with you there.
You put it nicer than I did.
But
that's all I meant to say. It's a lot more expensive.
You know, projects like this, and Charlottesville Tomorrow, as listeners know, we don't take a position on specific projects like this, but I do try to reflect on the comments that I hear both from the public, from people like Kevin Lynch, who you just had on the show, but also from the elected officials and the staff at the RWSA. One of the things that jumped out at me, Coy, in their staff report yesterday was they said, quote, "The design and construction of a new larger dam to replace a smaller dam while continuing to operate the water supply is a very large and complex project with many facets and challenges." And it certainly is when you think
sure.
about the work that is going to go into this. And so what's happened is they, Gannett Fleming, the contractor that's been working on this, you know, they had to do borings. And people probably saw their equipment out on I-64, you know, over the past 6 months. They were doing borings there. They were doing borings around the existing smaller dam, which has to be replaced or repaired. There's some dam safety issues there. And what they found...
What does that mean, borings? They're not just sitting around on a lawn chair with nothing to do,
well,
are they?
Well, I'll put it in layperson's terms because that's all I can do. But they basically drill a core. They have a big drill, and they pull out a rock sample. And they look to see what's the composition of the rock.
You can see the layers.
Yeah, different depths.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gannett Fleming's first take on that was, oh boy, we're going to have to go deeper than we thought, like 20 feet deeper than they thought. And that means a lot more concrete, and it means a lot more excavation and a lot more stuff to put in a new dam, not only in the base, but also on the sidewalls, where they felt like, you know, to get the right anchoring of this dam to make it safe and as tall as RWSA has asked for, it's going to be a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
So RWSA's reaction to that was, and no surprise given the community's attention on this, certainly this project is under a microscope, they said, oh boy, we better get a second opinion. And so they did. And that second opinion came in lower, still higher, but lower than the Gannett Fleming estimate. So we've got several estimates out there. I think Kevin Lynch referenced that. There's certainly ranges. and you have to look carefully at, are they talking about $2,008 dollars or $2,010 dollars? What's included in that package of cost? But I'll tell you, one of the big things that's included is the cost of goods and services. And I heard you say at the start of the program today, you know, we shouldn't have to pay for more water when we're paying for higher cost of gas and groceries and all those things. We shouldn't have to pay more for water, I think is what you said.
I said, it's what a horrible time to raise water rates when everything else is going up.
It is. And you know what? Part of what's going up is the cost of fuel, the cost of the materials to build a dam like this. And so you're seeing, just like we see inflation in our goods and services that we pay for at our homes, you're seeing it in major projects like this.
Right.
So part of that, I mean, we really shouldn't be surprised by that a price tag put on this in July 2004 is now more expensive.
What about this, Brian? And Hawes brought this up yesterday. The $37 million estimate, and now they come back and say it's about 70 or it could be less. There's another company now in on it. That included the earthen work, the earthen wall, and that in this new estimate, they've taken that out. But when you put that back in, it goes upwards of a range of, what, 82 to 99 million.
I think what you're referring to, I don't know about that, but I heard Kevin Lynch refer to it as the I-64 embankment and the work that needed to be done there. And
that land which the water will slosh against.
It will. And and which is why they were doing borings there. So I can't comment on that because I don't know if it was included or not.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good question.
Hawes said he asked Tom Frederick, is it included? And Tom Frederick said he pulled it out of this estimate.
Okay.
But it was included in the previous estimate. So if you want apples to apples, it actually, this new estimate is like the range is upwards of $100 million. And that doesn't include the pipeline, which puts it up close to $150 million as a final price. It's
well,
a lot of
much
money.
Higher than that, because the whole package before, in 2007, when the price tag was put on everything, it was like $142 million. So, and you know, we're probably now, you know, north of $200 million when you add everything up. And and so I think, you know, one of the questions is, does that cause you to wonder, is this the right plan? You know, it's expensive, no doubt. But any long-term solution to this community's 50-year and beyond water supply needs is going to be an expensive project.
Sure makes you wish you were on a well, doesn't it?
Now, there's a conversation going on about dredging, and that if it's done, certainly gets you capacity at the South Fork Reservoir, a reservoir we already have. And that makes sense to a lot of people. We have a reservoir built in 1966. Let's get it back to its original capacity, and that'll help us save more water, increase the water supply. So I think that's a common sense thing to do, and which is why there's a task force looking at that.
Yeah,
it's interesting. You know, some people say that's not what they're looking at, but it is. I mean, they are calling themselves the stewardship task force. So one of the questions they're trying to ask is, why would you dredge this? What are you trying to accomplish? Because before you go to a dredging contractor, they want to make sure they can explain what they're trying to get done. Are we trying to dredge to help the rowing team at UVA make sure they can go further upstream and all the way downstream to the dam? Or are we trying to do it to get as much capacity for the water supply? Or are we trying to avoid places where the Corps of Engineers is going to tell us, oh, you accidentally created wetlands there by not maintaining this, but now you're stuck with them.
Yeah.
You know, don't mess with them.
Can't dredge those wetlands.
And so that's another complex project. It's another one. There's some preliminary cost estimates on. And those that are incensed today at this increased cost for Ragged Mountain, I hope they're preparing themselves to be surprised by cost for dredging to go up, because I think undoubtedly that's going to happen. One thing I want to correct from what Kevin Lynch said was that there were really dramatically different estimates on the cost of dredging by Gannett Fleming and by another consultant. And we need to be careful when we talk about that, because the cost of getting the stuff, the sediment that's collecting in the bottom of South Fork, the cost of getting that out of the reservoir is identical. Gannett Fleming and the consultant that Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan invited to the community to give some ideas about that, they came up with the exact same number. almost. And so,
but again, Fleming's number was much higher because they were factoring in the cost of getting rid of the dirt.
Exactly.
That's really expensive.
Right.
But some local folks have come forward saying, you know, like Pat Enright, hey, we got a gorge. You know, we'll take that dirt at right. a fraction of the cost that Gannett Fleming was saying.
But again, and I think if you carefully read Gannett Fleming's report, they say we're being very conservative here. We're giving you a worst case number that you have to actually put all this mud into trucks and take it somewhere else because nobody will buy it or nobody will have any use for it.
Right.
You have to pay to dump it somewhere. And so again,
it was a worst case scenario.
It was a worst case scenario. Yeah. And,
but they never asked for a second opinion on that.
But you know why?
Explored it.
But they didn't because they didn't have to at that point in their mind. So RWSA said, listen, if we dredge South Fork back to its original capacity, that still doesn't give us enough supply. And Kevin Lynch acknowledged that. He said it gets you almost there. And when a caller called in and asked about that, and you ask him about it, and it gets you, in his mind, almost there, but not all the way there. If you start revisiting assumptions about population, about conservation, and how thirsty we are and can we drink less, then, yeah, you can come up with a lower number. And then maybe you can make it all work out with a different plan. But what I heard Dave Norris and Ken Boyd, who were both on WINA this morning, say is that from their point of view as representatives of city and county government, they don't think it's time to revisit the fundamentals of the 50-year water supply plan.
Because the fundamentals of the plan are strong, Brian. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, for our Tuesday afternoon growth and development and water and pie discussion. And Betty is on the line with a quick question. Betty, go right ahead.
Thanks. I have a quick question for Brian. Brian, you've been following this a long time. So in 2003, dredging was $40 million, and then 2005, it went up to $145 million. And the update for it came because the council held a public hearing, as you knew, in 2007, and Kendra Hamilton actually asked for that, and Mr. Frederick told her that he had an update, but he'd get it to the council. It came many, many months later, and it was $223 million at the high end. So here's my question. The full-height dam was $37 million in 2005, and there never was an update on that price, and that price never went up. And now we're told that the $37 million price, which included all the embankment work and all these other, if you look at the hook, it's all beautifully laid out, all these other costs, is not being included in the $70 million, which is the low end. So you really, to build the dam, have to do the embankment work and all the other work. And so if you add it all up, we're up to $100 million. So I just want your comment on that.
You want a comment? I thought you had a question.
Well, just your comment. I want your comment on, in 2005, the dam was $37 million, and that price never rose. That was never updated. And yet the dredging price, which is $145 million in 2005, went up to $223 million in 2007.
Well, my recollection of that, Betty, was that the dredging cost went up when Gannett Fleming was asked to come back and update the numbers to bring them up.
Why didn't they update the dam numbers? Why did the dam number always remain 37?
That's a good question. Don't know.
Why did the dam number go?
I would think then they would have been able to look forward and say, you know, like what they did now. They could have said in 2010 dollars, here's what you're looking at.
Right.
I don't know if that was
an update.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Betty. Appreciate it. And it's a good point. And I guess I don't want to speak for her, but is she trying to get to the point that I've heard other people say that Gannett Fleming presented these numbers in such a way so that building the dam and the new reservoir and the pipeline would appear to be the only option?
Well, certainly lots of people are alleging that.
Yeah. But we don't know. I don't work for Gannett Fleming.
I mean,
and they've never eaten in my kitchen, so I'm not quite sure.
Coy, I think the a lot of people are who don't want the dam built to the full height at Ragged Mountain want dredging to be done first. And if dredging doesn't start tomorrow, they've got a real problem with any discussion of this topic. And to the point where yesterday folks were calling for all of them to resign from the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority Board. And at the very end of the meeting, Bob Tucker, who's the county executive, he pointed out that, well, we basically all serve at the pleasure of City Council and the Board of Supervisors. So I think, you know, and Dave Norris reflected on this morning, the mayor of Charlottesville, and he said, you know, and other people have said this, that there should be an elected official or officials on the RWSA board. Dave Norris described that as a way to rebuild public trust in some of the things that they're doing. But I guess, you know, my immediate reaction to that is these elected officials are the ones entrusted with putting the people on the RWSA board. If at any point they think they're being misled by a county executive or a city manager or somebody else on staff, they can let them go immediately and should.
You mean not necessarily fire them, but get them off that board?
Or both. I mean, if you had an employee lying to you to benefit a construction firm like Gannett Fleming, which is really what's being alleged, then, yeah, they could remove them from office immediately.
Yeah. And Rob Schilling, Kendra Hamilton, and Kevin Lynch have all come forward now and saying, you know, we weren't told all the facts here when we voted years ago.
That's right.
on city council.
They are, you know, Kevin Lynch says that he was misled. The other people on council don't seem to see it that way. And is that something that when you get out of office, you have more latitude to speak freely about something? I mean, I don't think that's what's going on.
Well, it could be that, and it could also be that they have learned things since they were on council that they didn't know then when they really started looking into it.
But the public should know that if they are not happy with something being proposed or something not being done, city council and the Board of Supervisors really should be taking that feedback. And people like Betty Mooney.
So don't go to the board, go to city council or the Board of Supervisors.
You can go to both. And people like Betty Mooney do, and Kevin Lynch. And they go to both localities and provide their feedback. And so, you know, I just want to make that point that I think those that think there needs to be accountability, that is in the hands of our elected officials. That is why one of the reasons Charlottesville Tomorrow is here is to help people understand things like that and to document this public process. So the audio from the past, from the RWSA press conference.
That's where I was going next.
That audio is available online. The audio.
I've listened to it. It's awesome.
Of their board meeting is online.
It's so cool because, you know, when you watch the nightly news or even you listen to WINA, you get like a little snippet. But what's so great, you can go to cvilletomorrow.org and the whole meeting is there.
And those two were short meetings, and you can read our summary. There's a timeline at the bottom. You can jump. If you want to jump right to Betty Mooney's comments, we tell you exactly what, the minute mark they start, and you can listen to them.
Yeah.
So
it really is. It's a fantastic service, and we just thank you for the – we never do this enough, really, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you for the work you do and your team and the folks who invest in Charlottesville Tomorrow. It's a private thing here. It's a nonprofit, and it's folks from the community who – put in their own money to make this happen, and it is a real service for everybody on all sides of all these issues, because it's just a matter of educating people. Let us turn the page if we can. We've talked a lot about water, and we're not going to end the conversation here. I'm sure we'll be talking about it some more. This is a major, major, horribly expensive project that will continue to be debated here in our community, And we'll be talking about it more on this program, certainly. But we got a lot more to talk about when it comes to growth and development. Have you seen that new grocery store in Crozet? Boy, that thing is flying up.
Is it? I saw the foundation. I haven't. My wife drives by every day.
And they're building that. That's going to be an HT, what I call an HT, in Harris Teeter. There's also going to be, it looks like, other buildings, like maybe a strip mall part to it right across the parking lot.
Really?
It looks like it. Looks like there's other stores in there, unless they're building a parking garage.
We'll have to check that out.
I didn't think they were going to.
Crozet is definitely growing. And if you drive into Old Trail, there's a lot happening in Old Trail, too.
Really?
The town center is starting to come out of the ground.
What's going to be in there?
All sorts of things.
A grocery store?
Not a major grocery store, like yogurt shops
and that kind of thing.
I know there's going to be a Segway dealer somewhere around there.
I've seen people talking
about that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. A Crozet resident is setting up a Segway dealership.
Have you ever been on one of those things?
I have not. I've always wanted to.
I was in, where was I? I was down in Norfolk one day, and a guy just went by with his briefcase on his Segway. I was like, damn.
I drive in, you know, I live in Ivy, so I have to drive to work. And I drive in on 5th Street, you know, Ridge Street. And when I'm coming in on 5th, every once in a while, there's a guy in a Segway trucking in on Fifth Street.
Really?
And yeah, he's got a long commute with that thing.
So let's talk about this new private school. What is this? There's a new school?
There's an existing school called the Charlottesville Day School, which has a building, I gather, on Four Seasons Drive over by ACAC.
Is that the one it's like used to be part of ACAC, didn't it?
I don't know. I don't know the history on that. They've got about 150 children right now in their school.
Uh-huh.
And they were in front of the Albemarle County Planning Commission last week, and our new intern, Daniel, was covering that story. And what we learned was it was what's called a pre-application work session. It's one of those things where, hey, we've got an idea and we want to sort of float a trial balloon here and see what you think before we spend too much time working on this.
Right, right.
And what's interesting about this koi is it's on Hydraulic Road, just past Albemarle High School. And
Hydraulic Road.
So Hydraulic Road, you're heading down Hydraulic from 29, let's say.
There's that big new church on the left.
And I'm not sure where it is in reference to that, but it's across from what's called Webland Drive and Burnham Drive.
And there's a couple of mobile home parks in there, too.
What's interesting is if you're on Hydraulic and you just passed Albemarle High School, most everything on the left is rural area. So Albemarle County's rural countryside. And on the right is the growth area. So Hydraulic is the boundary.
Ah, that's interesting. You're right.
The school wants to be in the rural area.
On this side of the street, on the Albemarle school
side. On the western
side
of the street, yeah, where Albemarle High School is. And so that presents some challenges in the minds of many planning commissioners.
As my daughter would say, survey says.
Well, some of it's well and septic issues. We're sort of back to water here. But it would be unlikely in the minds of many of these people that they would be allowed to connect to public water and sewer. And so any expanded development would be on its own and have to have a septic tank and well. But guess what it's in the watershed of? The South Fork Ravana Reservoir, which is right nearby. There's a stream at the bottom of the property.
Do they own this land already?
That I'm not sure about. That's a good question.
Or they're like, we could buy this land.
I'm not sure. That's a good
question. So they want to basically build a new school.
They do. They want to expand. They've got, like I said, about 150 students today. They want to go up to 185 to 228.
I could swear that's the school that used to be part of ACAC, and it's connected to ACAC. It's down by the pool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be part of ACAC, but they split, and they're sort of a separate thing now. Very nice school. And a nice facility, but I guess they need to move out and be on their own.
So folks like Tom Loach, who's a planning commissioner from Whitehall, who has lots of experience with the Crozet growth area and that boundary between growth area and rural area, he was one of the planning commissioners saying, there's a reason there's a line here, and as one commissioner, I'm sticking to it. Eric Strucco, the Samuel Miller commissioner, also feels that way. Linda Porterfield, who's a newer commissioner from Scottsville, appointed by Lindsay Doerier, has taken a different outlook on a lot of these proposals as they've come forward. So there's this one. There's the athletic facility on Pantops out 250 east, past I-64.
Yeah.
And Linda Porterfield has been very open to putting things into, what she considers highway commercial corridors. One part of it's already got a bunch of stuff along the highway, so why not have some more business there?
What's another school? What's another indoor sports arena?
She said, she felt like it would be an acceptable use to have a school there. But I think what the applicant heard was there was not overwhelming support for this. So they're going to probably go back to the drawing board, and we'll see if they come back.
We're talking with Brian Reeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. Do we have time to talk about these development rights?
Yeah, briefly. I think what's interesting about this is we're talking about the transfer of development rights, and Charlottesville Tomorrow has been following this a long time, ever since Supervisor David Slutsky started proposing this as a way to protect the rural countryside. David Slutsky came onto the Board of Supervisors he was elected in 2005, so he started January 2006, and he said, there seems to be a stalemate with the community on how to protect the rural countryside, so I want to throw a new idea out there. Let's talk about taking development rights that exist out in the countryside, and let's set up a mechanism where they could be sold by a property owner out there to a developer who wants to exercise that right in a growth area.
So you
somewhere.
Could separate the development rights from the property.
Right.
Yeah.
You could put them, basically you could bank them and sell them when you wanted to get a little cash.
So a farmer could get money from the development rights of his land without seeing his ancestral farm turned into a cookie-cutter neighborhood.
They would be able, yes. And some farmers think that's a good thing. Others, though, don't want to maintain as much flexibility as possible on what they view as their retirement fund.
Yeah.
So this is their major asset. And some of them are reluctant today, I think, to do conservation easements on the bulk of their property because that's permanent. With the sale of development rights, you could sort of do it piecemeal. If you had 10 development rights, you could sell one when you needed one. Anyway, David Slutsky has been shopping this idea around. He got delegates Rob Bell and David Toscano both to put some legislation into the General Assembly over the past two sessions that's enabled Albemarle County to explore this if it wants to.
Is anybody else doing it in Virginia? Do we know?
There are a few other localities looking at it. I can't say for certain that one has done one of these programs in recent time under this new regimen. But what's interesting is the conversation is shifting away from Slutsky's original vision for this. And it's shifting at there's an informal group meeting. The Weldon Cooper Center is facilitating this with Lee Middleditch and others who are interested in keeping this conversation going. They thought David had an interesting idea and they wanted to see it fleshed out. So you've got farmers in the room, you've got realtors in the room, you've got developers in the room, and they're all trying to hash this out with David Slutsky and people like Dennis Rooker.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
And John King. I think it is.
Yeah.
And so we go to all their meetings, but it's shifting over time as they're getting feedback from all these different constituencies. So now off the table is any downzoning of the rural countryside. David Slutsky saw that as a key component of his plan, that you would take the minimum lot size from like 20 acres to 50 acres and downzone it, but you would get on paper those rights that you lost that then you could bank and sell. That's off the table. Another part of Slutsky's plan was to create a new boundary area, he called it, where you could build those development rights. You're moving them somewhere else. You're building them in this boundary area that would hug the county's growth area.
Sort of an extension of the growth area, area two.
Growth area two, off the table. There will be no expansion of the growth area to pursue this. So those are two of the main things in his plan that are now off the table.
What's left?
What's left is encouraging people to voluntarily participate in some transfer development rights scheme. And then in exchange, when they release that right, they would go into a conservation easement. Now, the question is, what would it look like when these are exercised, and will there still be proffers? Will the developer still have to follow certain
guidelines?
Still
a lot of questions to answer.
There's still a lot of questions, but it's rapidly changing. We're keeping a close eye on that. If you go to our news center, look in the left column, there's a transfer of development rights category. It'll get you all those stories.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Coy.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show is on the air Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. Join in on the show by calling 434-977-1070 or feel free to leave a comment on the show at cvillepodcast.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.